This show is part of the Thrill Me Podcast Network. Experience more on Facebook and YouTube.
Hey, what's going on? This is Thomas Nicholas. Welcome to the Metal Groove with your host, Tombstone, Josh.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into a brand new episode of the Metal Groove Podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. My name is Josh. While you're here, please hit that like and subscribe button. Make sure you rate and review. Be a friend, tell a friend, share the program, spread the word, help us grow, man. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you guys so much. On today's show, joined by a local guitarist, awesome musician. Proud to call him a friend, but my buddy Austin Livingston's on the show today. We're going to be talking about his band, talking about guitars, talking about his start with music, everything. And he honestly was the first name that came to mind when I thought about, hey, I want to do a Van Halen episode talking about this news that was just released on the Howard Stern show. So we're going to be talking about that, giving my thoughts, but then also talking to him about guitars, music, life, all of those good things, man. So stay tuned for that. But again, thank you guys. Thrill Me Podcast Network, lock it in. Thank you guys so much. Whether it's YouTube, Spotify, Apple iTunes, you can find us anywhere. Just throw Metal Groove Podcast into your Google machine. We'll pop up right there and join us, man, because it's a good time. I love talking to you guys about music that I love, and we're going to do that right now. Okay, first things first, Sammy Hagar, Van Hagar. A lot of people don't like that era of Van Halen. When you think of the iconic, legendary songs, David Lee Roth, that era of the band is what most people normally bring up. I happened to grow up at a time when I was getting into music. You know, Right Now was coming out. Finish What You Started was coming out. Balance, 5150. Those were the albums that were on rotation a lot of the time in my household. My dad is a giant Van Halen fan, so that kind of just whittled its way on down to me, and I became a massive Van Halen fan as well, even to the point where I got in a debate. I was invited on a podcast earlier this year to argue with somebody about what's the greatest American rock band of all time. I knew ahead of time this guy was bringing Metallica to the table, and I sat on it for a couple of days. I was like, man, who can I put up against them? And I just kept coming back to Van Halen because the influence there, the songwriting, the hits, the everything, to me felt like it stacked up. You could go watch the episode if you want to see who won that debate. But I've always been a Van Halen fan, and especially the Van Hagar era stuff, like the Balance album, it's killer to me, man. It's one that I can listen to all the time. I believe my dad had a Right Now live double CD that. Man, when I came home from school, whether it was doing homework or just hanging out around the house or just on the weekends, I found myself listening to that a lot, man, because not only was Van Halen a great band writing songs, recording songs, but live, they were phenomenal as well. And if I remember correctly, that album had the Pleasure Dome drum solo by Alex, which, you know, there's another check mark right there. Alex Van Halen's one of my favorite drummers of all time. But that particular drum solo is legendary to me. It's one I like to listen to all the time. So the Van Halen, Sammy Hagar era, big deal to me, man. I think I prefer that one just a little bit more than the David Lee Roth era. Not throwing any shade, not putting any hate or anything. I think that's just what I prefer a little bit more, man. Sammy Hagar is an icon, and I can't believe he's still doing what he's doing at his age, man. So props to the Red Rocker for being amazing for many, many, many decades. But I'm going to read this article right now, share my thoughts a little bit as we go. I think my favorite Van Hagar era song has got to be Pound Cake. Whether it's the recorded version, live version, you know, Video Music Awards version, the CD version, that live one I was talking about. It's just, that song always hits, man. The catchy hook of it, the guitar solo, the drum work is awesome, man. So I think that's my favorite Sammy Hagar era song. And there's a lot of good ones, especially that 5150 album. Oh, geez, McCriminy. What a great album that is. But if you guys want to let me know in the comments what your favorite Sammy Hagar era Van Halen song is, throw those in those comments below, or just let me know what you think about the Sammy versus the Dave eras. It's a fun debate, man. And there's really no way you can go wrong. If there was never a David Lee Roth version, you know, we still have a great catalog of music. But the good news is that we have both, and we can celebrate and appreciate both. But anyways, enough of my jibber jabber. Let me dive into reading this article. And it started from the Howard Stern Show. So we're going to go from there. On Howard Stern, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Sammy Hagar is embarking on the long-awaited Best of All Worlds 2024 tour. Hagar will be joined by rock heavyweights and longtime bandmates Michael Anthony, original bass player for Van Halen, Jason Bonham, son of John Bonham, legendary drummer in his own right, and then Joe Satriani, world-renowned, fantastic soloist, guitar player, instrumentalist, that kind of guy. Sammy Hargo goes on to say, we're going to go deep in the Van Halen catalog. And if you're going to go deep into Van Halen catalog, you need Joe Satriani. Although Hagar and Anthony normally play 5 or 6 Van Halen songs on the road with The Circle, which is another band Sammy Hagar's in, Sammy told Stern that they plan to play 5 or 6 of their songs alongside a whole catalog of Van Halen classics and deep cuts. When we go out next year in July, it will be almost 20 years since Mike and I did a reunion with Ed and Al in 2004. Mike and I just said, we can't wait another 20 years. How long can I even sing these songs? How long can I even do this stuff? I just thought it's time to serve the fans. And Sammy's always been a people of the fans, man. So I appreciate him for what he was doing. When I first heard this news, I was like, damn it, Sammy, what are you doing? Is this just some kind of publicity thing? Are you just trying to go out there and put Eddie's name on something and try and make some money? But then I remembered Sammy's heart's normally always in the right place. So, you know, I think this is a good idea. Regarding the challenge of learning Eddie's part, Satriani said, there are things that are so iconic that you have to just nail it. But if you go in deep with what he did live, he never played the same thing twice. It's a daunting task when you do the deep dive into what he did. But it's a good start at the beginning, and then you just earn all of his little improvs, and you get the idea of what he's trying to do. The tour follows on the footsteps of the chart-topping success of The Collection 2, a box set that was released of remastered versions of the Hagar era Van Halen 5150, OU812, I forgot about that. What an awesome name for an album that is. For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. Hey, folks, if you put those first letters together, get a fun one right there. And then Balance. Big fan of that album, Balance. A reminder of fans of the arsenal of hits, many of which they haven't played live since the 2004 reunion tour. Collectively, Anthony, Satriani, and Bonham have played together in nearly every phase of Hagar's career, including Chickenfoot, The Circle, and Van Halen. They play songs like Finish What You Started, 5150, Your Love Is Driving Me Crazy, Best of Both Worlds, Pound Cake, Sexy Little Thing, There's Only One Way to Rock, Right Now, Good Enough, Eagles Fly, Dreams, the list goes on and on. It's crazy to think that it'll be 20 years since Mikey and I played these songs with Van Halen. With Joe on board, we can take a deeper dive into those years. We're going to touch on some hits from my entire career, but seeing the fans old and new really embrace the new collection set off something in Mikey and I. All right, that's cool, man. I'm looking forward to it. So they said it's kicking off next July. Looks like they're going to be starting in Florida. They're going to hit Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia, and they're going to make their out way west, and then they're actually going to come back towards Tennessee. So I'm going to have plenty of opportunities to go see them if I think I'm going to go see that. If they maybe Charlotte. Charlotte's tempting. I do like Charlotte. Maybe I can get Travis to go out there with me. But yeah, so I think that's really cool. I think it's a great thing what they're doing. And I'm interested to see what songs they actually play, man. So it's going to be a good time. I think Joe Satriani is going to do justice. I don't think he's going to try and mimic him completely. I think he's going to put his own spin on the things, on the parts. And it's going to be good. It's going to be good. I can't wait to see some video. That'll probably be my selling point. If I can see the video and see what they're doing live, looks like it's going to be fun. I think I might have to get out there and go see that. All right. Again, if you guys have any thoughts on this tour, or what they're doing, do you think it's a proper tribute to Eddie? I have seen some rumors that, maybe not rumors, I think they are actual news facts that Sammy did invite, Alex Van Halen. He invited Wolfie, he invited Dave out. He didn't say, hey, Dave, you're not going on the whole tour with us. But he did invite those guys. I feel like it's a good tribute. Maybe I wanted to see a more collection of a bunch of different guitarists coming in to do things. But I believe this is okay too. I think this is a good idea. But anyways, let me know what your guys' thoughts are on the tour. on Eddie Van Halen, Sammy Hagar, all of those things. But right now, we're going to jump to an interview with my friend Austin, local dude, phenomenal guitar player. And then, like I said earlier, stick around at the end for one of his songs. The band that he is in is going to sound familiar because a number member of that band was on the show as well. We talk about that. We talk about all kinds of things, man. But hey, let's get to it, man. Rock and roll. What's up, everybody? Joining me on the show today, I wanted to talk Van Halen news, and why not talk to who I think is probably the best guitar players in Charleston. He plays guitar for the band Wicked Love. If that name sounds familiar, we had their singer Brendan on the show a couple months back. The band is awesome. They're phenomenal. We're going to be talking to the axeman of that band. His name is Austin Livingston. What's up, brother, man? How you doing?
How's it going? I'm doing good. Well, thank you for having me.
Hey, man, thank you so much for joining me on. You honestly, I promise you, I'm not just kidding. Whenever I wanted to talk guitarist, which I have two great guitarists in my band, but I've known you for a long time. I was like, and you did solo guitar work.
I did.
I was like, Austin is who I want to talk to about phenomenal guitar playing, Eddie Van Halen, and all of that stuff. So I am so glad you're on the show. Your first name I thought of, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And we have similar tastes in music. For a while there, we were like, man, we're going to start a Skid Row cover band. You remember that back in the day?
Oh, yeah. That was a while ago, wasn't it?
That was a long time ago.
When was that?
Oh, my gosh.
How far back like can your memory go?
Let's see. That was around the time, that was after I played with Rite of Ruin. Dude, that had to be more than 10 years, maybe right at 10 years ago.
Man, I was a little stinker then.
But that's cool, man. That's cool. Good times. But yeah, I was just saying that because we have similar tastes in music and I felt like you're the perfect fit for this episode. But just to start there, you know, for people that aren't familiar with you, man, Austin, are you from Charleston? Where are you from originally?
Born and raised in Charleston, actually on James Island. There's not a whole lot of us natives left.
That's for sure. Yeah, that's why I asked that question. So when did you get started with music? What was the first instrument you picked up? Was it guitar?
Let's see. Well, I guess I've always been doing something, well, maybe not doing something seriously in music, but I've always had a love for it since I was a small kid. I always thought that instruments were the coolest thing. So joining the middle school band, I was like, oh, I get to play a shiny instrument. I was doing the saxophone, I think. And, tried to get recruited to the marching band in high school. I'm like, that's for nerds, dude. I'm only going into the high school marching band if I can play drums. So they let me play drums. And that was kind of the first instrument that I took seriously. I think around my junior year, high school, sophomore year, I came across a Poison video and a Def Leppard video. And I was like, oh, geez, this is pretty cool. I should probably play guitar so I can be up on front of the stage and see all the women.
Yeah, that comes in handy.
I mean, of course, it started out, you know, like kind of cliche like that. But now it's, you know, it's definitely a passion for sure.
That's cool. That's cool. So CC DeVille, that was your main influence growing up? Was it the hair that caught your eye?
I would say that the flashiness caught my eye, yes. Uh-huh. I was just like, whoa, this is cool. And from there, it went on into Def Leppard and AC/DC. Wouldn't say that, you know, of course, I wouldn't say that CC is one of my top guitarists, but he is up there.
Cool.
He was an inspiration for me, though.
Gotcha, man. No spoilers, because I might be asking your top five guitars toward the end of this. But do you remember the first song you wanted to learn or did learn? And was that the what was the catalyst of the guitar playing? Like, what song was it that kind of struck your ear?
Let me see if I can remember this. I was, you know, I know that I learned Thunderstruck by AC/DC for my junior talent show.
Nice.
Although I thought that was super cool. I saw like, I think it was the Live at Donington tape by AC/DC. It was in like 91 or something. And I came across that at Walmart and I was like, this looks cool. So I just bought it. And then I was like, oh man, Thunderstruck. That would get a lot of phone numbers. Maybe if I was like playing like the lead line.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually it won us the talent show playing Thunderstruck. Nice. We won the talent show. But I will say that if it was kind of the first two songs that I really wanted to play was either Fallen Angel by Poison. Nothing But a Good Time. It was
right, great
the videos there. That did it for me. I was like, man, these videos are cool, dude. Like, this is like rock star stuff.
Yeah, man. No kidding. So that is your wheelhouse, you would say, is that kind of that late 80s, maybe early 80s, just that kind of vibe. And so that I wanted to ask that first, is that your wheelhouse? And then whenever you progressed on to playing your own stuff, is that where you draw inspiration from when you're doing your own riffs?
I think, you know, I took that stuff, learned it back to front, because I just love the whole mid 80s to late 80s hair band genre. But I didn't want to be one dimensional either. So it's just, that's going to be the meat and potatoes, but I'm going to try to learn some other styles as well to kind of sprinkle on top and make a full meal.
That's cool, man. Yeah, I've always appreciated that about your playing, man. Your versatility is very solid. So anytime I do get to come out and see you guys, it's fun to watch you play. So one thing that always pisses me off about when people talk about 80s music is they always kind of say it's cheesy or these people are just trying to put on a show. There's actually some really great guitarists that came from that era. Is there anybody that sticks out in your mind that's maybe underappreciated or underrated?
Well, let's see. Well, first off, hell yeah, they're trying to put on a show. It's fun. It's supposed to be a show. It's
yeah.
not supposed to be boring and just everyone looking at the ground and not smiling. Excuse me, that's my cat. He's a loud little baby. If I have to let him in, I might if he gets too much louder. But I would say that, you know, if we want to get into top guitarist, I really, as far as guitar music, and because I started out as a rhythm player, but I was eventually I was like, I want to try lead. Well, the first guy that really got me into lead that I became obsessed with was George Lynch.
Oh, wow.
And then that kind of morphed into Steve Vai. And I literally idolized those two guys for a long time. It wasn't until recently, probably within the last few years, that I really just fallen in love with Paul Gilbert's playing. I just like how technical and clean and aggressive that his sound is. And of course, he's a really good teacher. I don't know if you ever watched all those old REH instructional videos back in the day that all the hairband guys made, but a lot
probably
of them,
sure. That'd probably be a lot better if I did.
Yeah, you know, a lot of them were amazing players, but it was as boring as watching paint dry trying to learn from them. But Paul Gilbert's really good at connecting with you and breaking things down like that. It's
that's cool, man. Fun. That's cool. All right, well, while we're talking about guitarists, I'm on a little sidetrack because what do you think of this guy right here?
What is that, Buckethead?
I think. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
What do you think of his playing?
You know, I've seen him play, well, not live, but I've watched his videos and all, and I've heard some of his music. I will be honest, I haven't deep dived into him.
Yeah.
But the stuff that I have heard, I really like, and I know that he was Paul Gilbert's student, I believe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So
that's awesome.
I think it's cool. He's unique. He's got a dang chicken bucket on his head and a nice mask. You know, I mean, it's whatever works for him.
Cool, man. I bring that up because he's one of my favorites. You know,
that's
I'm a
awesome.
Big Guns N' Roses. Whenever he joined Guns N' Roses, which I love Slash, but the stuff he would add and interpret on top of what Slash was playing was just kind of like, okay, I need to see what he's doing in his solo work, and I kind of fell in love with it. So maybe I'll send some stuff your way, my friend.
Awesome, for sure.
All right, let's dive back into you, buddy. So first band, maybe, did you do like the garage band thing growing up after the talent show? Did you guys decide that you were going to go and try and make it big?
Funny thing was after the talent show, I was like, hey, guys, we should like write our own music because that would get us lots of cool points in high school. So we were like, wrote a few tunes, and I believe that, what was our band name? I think it was Vintage.
Okay.
And after we wrote about 5 to 6 songs, now granted, yes, they were good for 14, 15, 16-year-old kids, but at, you know, that I view it now, but at the time I was like, man, these are the best songs ever written. And then, and I was like, all we got to do is record this, put out an EP and then we'll be famous in 6 months. For some reason, I thought that if we put out a demo that we'd get big in 6 months. I don't know why. I mean, that's just the young, flawed thinking, I guess. I was just very excited to enter the music world. Mm-hmm. That was kind of my first band. And then it's all like a blur now. I just had like to keep going. And I mean, like, you've been in bands too. It's almost like a never ending battle to find people that are in the same genre as you, that are skill wise just as good, but also, you know, like they got the same drive to want to take
it. Motivated, chemistry, all those things, man. It is kind of a hard match to find.
Yeah.
All right, so what made you decide? You had a run there for a little while where you were doing solo. I believe it was called Jupiter Down, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so what brought that on, and is that something you still like to do in your downtime, or what's going on? Let's go with starting that. What started that?
Let's see, starting it. I have, you know, ever since getting into lead work, I've always been, I wouldn't say envious, but might as well just say it. I was like envious of Steve Vai and all those guys that had the instrumental work, even Satriani. Mm-hmm. I was like, how do I do this? Because it was always hard to find a singer.
Yeah.
And I was just like, screw it. I don't want to deal with it no more. So I was just like, I'm just going to do my own thing. And to be honest, I think I really needed to do it to prove to myself. Now we're getting some deep things here. I struggle with, you know, feeling if I'm good enough, as I think a lot of musicians do. Gotcha. I felt a lot of pressure back then. Like it was just this thing of I had to prove something. I had to prove something to myself and prove something to others. Made both of the Jupiter Down albums. I believe that the second one, what was it called? Like The Story of Us. I'm drawing a blank here on my own stuff. But I feel like that fully embodied who I am as a musician and what I wanted to say on the guitar and musically. And it has taken a whole lot of just stress off of me to where it's just like, okay, that's done. That's out of my system. I've proven to myself that I can do it. I have a tangible product. And it's allowed me to just kind of sit back and just enjoy the music more.
Cool, man.
Because, you know, I don't really feel like I have anything to prove anymore. And that's what's good.
Yeah. I think it was the Tin Roof is where I seen you. Like you'd come out there, you would set up your sound system, that your backing track, and you would play to it. It was awesome, man. It was so cool just to see you up there doing that, man. It was awesome, dude.
I might, and I know that you were asking, is it still a thing? Of course, it's always there. It is, I would say currently on the back burner because I am focused more on Wicked Love. I do really like the camaraderie of having a full band. You know, contrary to what everybody believes about lead guitar players, and we always want the spotlight on us, I prefer being in that band to where it's like, it's not on me all the time. It's not Austin front and center, play all your solo stuff. Like there's a time and a place for that in the band. It's a team unit.
And that's cool. That's good. That's good positivity on your part, man. But you guys are an awesome band. All right. So talking about writing riffs, is there a dedication that you put towards writing riffs, whether it's solo work or whether it's for Wicked Love? Where do you draw that line, or do they interweave? Is it kind of like I was noodling on this, I think it would sound good like this? How does that work for you?
You know, I should probably be better at time management and split up my times. Like right now, since Wicked Love is the main focus, most of the time when I'm sitting down to try to jam or write, it's going to be those ideas. But, you know, of course, Jupiter Down is still me, so something's going to come out that I'm like, that's a little too proggy for this Wicked Love project. Let's put it in the back burner for Jupiter Down's next thing. I would think that it's – and when I write, I wouldn't say that I have a set time to write. I probably should. I'd probably be a lot more productive. But usually when I write, I just – plug up a drum machine on my computer and just jam and see what comes out. If nothing happens of it, I'm not stressed about it anymore. I used to be so stressed that why can't I write? Why can't I have writer's block? I had to get rid of all that.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, man. Just it just free flows out of you. That's what's, you know, it's organic and just kind of a beautiful thing about it. Cool. So let's talk a little bit about Wicked Love before I ask you about that cool stack of guitars you have back there. Whenever I had Brendan on, I believe the Wicked Love EP or maybe just the song had the single had released.
Okay.
So I had him on. We talked about the song. Tell me about what's been going on with the band since that time and maybe what's on the horizon for you guys. I did see you guys are actually, speaking of Tin Roof I brought up earlier, you guys are playing there this upcoming weekend, right?
This Saturday was at the 2nd, and I believe we're playing first, so we're probably starting around 9 p.m. sharp.
Ooh.
We're playing with Jared Petty's and the Headliners.
Wow.
What a... as well as Anergy.
Nice.
Headliners. So, yeah, definitely come out. It's going to be a banger.
Get there early, man. That's a that's an interesting group of bands, but all really, really good bands, man. It's going to be a good
for
time.
For sure.
Yeah, so what has Wicked Love been up to? What's coming up in the future for you guys?
Well, 2023 was, you know, I wouldn't say it was a super slow year, but it was more of a mellow year for us. We have recorded 3 new songs. It's in the final stages of mixing, and then we're going to send it off to be mastered. We did get a new drummer for this year. I think back in June or July.
Bro, I didn't get any calls or nothing, man.
Oh,
what's
man.
Up with
that? Oh, man.
I'm just kidding.
You're putting me on the spot now.
I'm just messing.
His name is Trevor. He's an awesome guy. I think you met him at the
probably
at our show at one point. I think when we played with Midnight Devils. Were you there?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, okay. That was a fun show.
That was an interesting night.
A whole hoot and a half, man. Next year, 2024, that's going to be a big year.
Sweet.
Now, when I say big year, I mean, we got a lot of stuff planned. We were actually sitting down at the band meeting last night, and we're just kind of outlining our goals for next year because, you know, to make it in this business, you got to be really aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't being aggressive enough, and that just comes with just life. We all got full-time jobs. Most of us have kids. And it's just like, hey, let's sit down. Let's focus. It's going to take some sacrifice. It's going to take a lot more effort than what we think. But it's time to be held accountable and be responsible and make these goals happen. So it's a whole different mindset shift for next year.
Wicked Love has grown up. How about that? Is that going to be the next album?
Growing up.
That's cool, though, man. I'm glad. That's good to have goals, dude. I appreciate that.
For
that's
sure.
Awesome, man. That's cool. I'm looking forward to it. I got to get me a Wicked Love shirt, dude. Let me get one of them things. Those things are
I'll
sweet.
I'll give you one, man.
Sure. All right, let's talk about your rig back here, man. Which one's your favorite that you like to play? Which one do you write with? Which one has the stage presence? Let's check out your collection, my friend.
I don't have most of them up here. This is just a couple. I will say, but they are most of my mains. The two Ibanezes are, of course, very special to me. I wrote both of the Wicked Love albums on them. Now, I will say this is just a standard Ibanez Prestige RG-655.
Beautiful.
Nothing special about it. All I did was, I think I put a super distortion in the bridge, DiMarzio. Other than that, it's just a straight up Ibanez. Nothing fancy.
Yeah.
I will say, here, let me set this on the floor real quick. This Ibanez, hold on, if you can see it, I know it's brighter than a flashlight.
Hopefully
it comes through on here, but it's called a Road Flare Red. But
this is
a 2007 reissue of the original 1987 models.
Mm-hmm.
And they only made 1,987 of them in this color, in black, and then in the was it like the desert yellow? It's like a bright neon yellow. Now, I had the neon yellow one years ago. Mm-hmm. For some odd reason, I don't know if I was, if I lost my man card and I was getting yelled at by the girlfriend at the time. And she's like, you got 10 mini guitars. You need to sell
them. Oh, no.
I guess I don't play the Ibanez that much. So I sold it. And I always wanted another one, but I really wanted this color. So
looks great.
Found this one, and to be honest, I never played it that much until I started doing the Jupiter Down stuff, and this was used on both records to do all the lead work. Sometimes the instruments just inspire you. So it's like, all right, this is a special one now. I can't ever get rid of it.
Yeah, I get it. I get that. And, yeah.
I mean, like the neck too, it's very hard like to see, but it's like a saltine cracker thin neck. I mean, I'm talking like thin, hand cramp thin.
Wow.
Built for shredding. It's like a Ferrari for guitars.
Beautiful.
Let me show you this other one. This is a pretty cool one. Let me set this down first. All right. Not sure if you've ever heard of this brand, but this is called, some people say Aristides or RSTDs or Titties for short. This guitar is not made out of wood. It's made out of, Arium, I think is what they call it. It's something, it's like a resin.
Okay, wow.
And it's got, is what they say, tons of little air bubbles that they have inside of it, and it gives the sound kind of like a 3D tone to it. Now, I know that's hard to describe, but you can hear all frequencies all equally.
Okay, wow.
I guess it's only subtle. It's more of a feeling. Mm-hmm. Can I tell the difference when I play this one over the wood guitars? Of course.
Yeah.
But it is a lot heavier. I mean, it's like a solid chunk of plastic at the end of the day. Like the guys.
I was going to ask if it was lighter, considering what it was made out of. But you're saying it's heavier. Okay.
I mean, like to be honest, it's probably on par with these. I mean, it actually kind of feels like it. But I mean, this is like damn near CC to Bill Pink right here.
Yes. I believe that's the one you played the night of the Midnight Devils, correct?
Yes.
I think I have a sweet picture of you playing that guitar. Yeah.
I think that's the one that you sent of me. Yeah. I think I have. It was where Brendan was like behind me, like, oh, dude, look at the nets.
Yeah, that guitar is beautiful, man.
It's a fun thing, man. It's a fun thing. You can never have too many guitars.
I believe you. I believe you. So let me ask you importance of – I'm just a dumb drummer. I say that anytime I talk to a non-drummer because us dumb drummers can kind of get on the same page.
Oh, man.
But what do you think is the most important aspect in maybe not guitar writing but guitar playing? And the reason I ask that question is because to me, whenever I hear a guitar player or I hear a solo that I love, it's the tone of the guitar that stands out to me, kind of like a beautiful, crisp sound. Just for example, Satchel. We both love Steel Panther. Satchel's tone is like, it's like, whoa, that sounds amazing. So what to you is the most important fundamentally part of playing?
I think, you know, having tone is, you know, 80-90% all in your hands and how you touch the instrument. Yes, having better gear does help you achieve better tone easier.
Mm-hmm.
You could take a beginner, somebody that's been playing a year or so, that hasn't quite developed that touch yet to get a good sound. You can put them on a $5,000 instrument and it's still going to sound like they're on their $200 instrument at the end of the
day. Okay.
It's just, you know, I say study your heroes, learn all their music, and then forget it. So what I mean by that is get all their techniques, absorb it all like a sponge, and just forget it all, stop learning it, and then just play. And eventually your subconscious creates your own style, because when you try to emulate somebody, it's never going to sound just like them. It's just going to come out like you.
Yeah, I get that. That's cool, man. Listen to that brain. Listen to that big brain on you, man. That's why I knew you were perfect. I knew you were perfect for this conversation I wanted to have, man. But yeah, thank you for showing us the guitars, dude.
That's awesome. No problem.
That's interesting.
I need more guitars. You can never have too many.
Let me ask you another dumb question while you're putting those away. I think, at least, I don't know if outsiders think this way as well, or maybe non-musicians, but I mean, I claim to be a musician. Whenever you go to play guitar, do you have to learn on acoustic first? Did you learn on acoustic first? What is the normal path there?
I would say a big hell no. I did not learn on an acoustic. But look, here's the thing. If you are somebody where your favorite artists all are mainly on acoustic and you want to learn those songs, that's what you're going to want to, I mean, like, that's what you're going to want to do. The stuff that was inspiring me at the time I decided to get into the guitar, I mean, that was the way to go. Was the
right.
And do I like playing acoustic? Yes. Do I ever? Hardly at all.
Ah.
It's there for me as just like an afterthought. I mean, sad but true. I love how, and you know, acoustic sounds. I got a couple of them in the closet there.
Mm-hmm.
But I hardly ever use them. And if I do, it's around a campfire. And then right on, you know, like, everyone's like, shred for me on that. I'm like, I can't. I mean, I could, but it's just not fun. It's very difficult.
Yeah, the way it plays is different. I gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, man. So everything you just heard from Austin there is his qualifications for just kind of like reminding me why I picked him to talk to about this, because he's a freaking brilliant guitar player. He's an awesome dude. But I'm going to read the headline of this thing, and then we'll dive into it for a little bit.
Okay.
And because I really want to hear your thoughts. But the headline is, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Sammy Hagar is embarking on the long-awaited Best of All Worlds tour. Hagar will be joined by heavyweights Michael Anthony, Jason Bonham, and Joe Satriani. And they're going to be doing a 28-date tour that is kind of like a celebration of Eddie Van Halen. They're going to be playing the stuff from the Van Hagar era of albums. Some things they'll be doing that are just, you know, the Panamas, the Jump. They're probably going to do those too, the more popular things. He did invite David Lee Roth. I don't know if you've seen any of the interviews for this thing, but he did say, hey, if Dave wanted to join us, he could. And then Dave said he would go on tour with them. And Sammy was like, well, wait a second. I didn't invite you on tour,
oh,
bro.
Man. Got to bring Dave.
Yeah, no kidding. Man. All right, so my first question to you, sir, is how do you feel about Van Hagar? Were you a fan of the Sammy stuff that they did?
I always liked his vocals. I will say that, you know, I like pretty much all Van Halen. I will say, as far as entertainment, pure entertainment and frontmanship, it's got to go to the first, the OG.
Yeah, I got you. I get that, man. I get that 100%. Okay, so the reason I wanted to bring you on to talk to you about this is Joe Satriani is going to be stepping into some pretty big boots on this tour. I don't know if you can, and if you can put your mindset into what you would have to try to do. Do you think that he is trying to play the parts perfectly? Do you think he's going to put that Satriani spin on it? Just like, how would you go about this task, and what do you think about him being picked for that role?
All right, so you said it was mainly a tour that was paying tribute to Eddie, correct?
Yes. Yeah, because nobody else has done it. Like, they did the Taylor Hawkins thing, which was kind of like a concert, but this is a tour of shows.
Granted, I could be wrong, but I feel that Joe Satriani is a well-respected player, and he respects a lot of other guitarists. And I personally feel like if it is a, you know, an honor or a tribute to Van Halen, he's going to do his best to, you know, I wouldn't say act, but sound as close to Eddie Van Halen and do that justice. Like, he's going to be like, I want people to close their eyes and be like, that's Eddie. That's Eddie. Now, he could not do that. He could play it as close as possible, but still put his Satriani twist to it. That's always, you know, a possibility. I don't think he could go wrong either way. But there will be the purist out there. That's not Eddie. Let's just appreciate the fact that you got four giants on stage playing awesome music that you grew up with. So let's just appreciate that.
I agree, man. It kind of reminded me of when Zakk Wylde was going to do the Pantera stuff, and people were saying, oh, he's not playing exactly like Dimebag did. But, I mean, it's Zakk freaking Wylde. You know what I mean? He's going to put his own spin on it.
Exactly.
So whenever you think of the Sammy Hagar era of Van Halen, like that tour going out there, do you think it'll be a success? Do you think it might be something that might branch off to other things?
I think it could be successful as far as now. I don't think, hopefully Sammy won't be like, that was a successful tour. I'm just going to reform Van Halen and have Sammy Hagar's Van Halen. Cause you know, some of them guys like to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he could. There's nothing stopping him.
Mm-hmm.
Probably sell. Actually, it would sell. I'd probably still go to it, but it is almost like it would just be like a cover band at that point.
Exactly. That's kind of like whenever I first saw the news, I was kind of like, oof, I don't know if this is a cash grab or I don't, you know, I didn't know exactly what his intentions were until you dive into the interview and he says that he invited Alex to be a part of it. He wanted Wolfie to be a part of it. Dave, all those people that are in the history of Van Halen, he wanted all of them to be a part of it. So I was like, you know what? Sammy's heart normally is in a good place.
Yeah.
And if they're going to do one run of it, it's probably going to be a good thing, man. And I like you said, they have some giants up there that are going to be playing the song. So, I mean, it should be a good time, at least. If they do come close, I'll probably go.
For sure. Wait, are they coming at least to Atlanta? I haven't
Hold on. Let me see if any dates are up here yet. Well, shoot. I don't see any dates in this one. Oh, wait, hold on. Here we go. I see Florida. I do see Charlotte.
Charlotte, that's pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like they're going to be hitting the southeast and then working their way up. So, yeah, it's going to be close. That's cool.
I think that I heard on the radio as well, Lynyrd Skynyrd and ZZ Top will be at the Coliseum here in Charleston, I think, what, March 30th?
Wow.
In March. And then, hey, if you're an 80s or late 80s, early 90s dance slash pop fan, I believe that New Kids on the Block and Paula Abdul will be here in Daniel Island in, I think it was June or July. But I was like, that's going to be pretty interesting. I didn't know that Paula Abdul still did stuff. But okay.
I didn't know she did either. That's great. That's a wild tour right there. I went to see the Black Crowes at Daniel Island in the middle of June. It was fucking hot, man.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
The way that stadium is set up, it's like you're baking for the whole 3 hours, which yeah. I'm sure the band was baked for 3 hours too, but
man.
That particular band. Ooh, okay. Wow. I have just a couple more for you, my friend, then I'll let you get out of here. When you think of songs like Finish What You Started, Best of Both Worlds, what would be your favorite Van Hagar song from that era? I know mine. I'm going to be giving my top five later in the show. What would be yours?
I would think the first one that comes to mind is I love 5150.
Ah.
Such a killer riff, and I really like the vocal melody on it. Now, what's funny in that song, it's right at the tail end.
Mm-hmm. But,
you know, and that's the cool thing about rock music is sometimes you go for it, or you should always go for it. Sometimes you miss, sometimes you nail it, but Sammy hit a high note at the very end, as soon as it's fading out, and you can tell that he kind of lost support and his voice like was cracking. Ah. Like, you know what? You went for it. And that note was high as balls. It was cool. Let's go.
Still sounds good, yeah.
I mean, you danced around the note, but it was good.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, you know, it further portrays to listeners that, like, yes, these guys are rock gods, but they're humans. They're just normal people.
Humans. Exactly. Yeah, man. That's cool. Yeah, that was kind of like a brought the real life aspect into the recording. So, yeah. Like, what is that Aerosmith song where Steven Tyler breaks something at the beginning of it and they just left it in the recording? I believe it's Sweet Emotion. Like, he's hitting something and it breaks.
I just leave
it in there.
Yeah.
All right, my friend.
Hard to place that.
Yeah. Hey, okay. Last few random ones I got for you before we get out of here. Best band you've ever seen live.
Ooh, best band I've ever seen live. I'm going to have to give it to my favorite band of all time, Def Leppard.
Ah, wow. Did you go out and see them on the stadium tour?
Yeah. Shoot. I didn't see them on their most recent tour. I didn't see them several years ago in Charlotte when they played with Kiss. And then a couple years later when they were in Columbia and it was with Night Ranger and Foreigner and then of course Def Leppard. Now I will say I've never seen Foreigner live until then, and I've seen them twice now, but Foreigner came damn near this close to blowing Def Leppard out. I was like, oh, Foreigner was that good, and I forgot that they had all those hits. I was like, y'all got catalog too. I totally forgot.
Gee, wow, that's cool, man. I saw Tesla live at the Music Forum a long, long time ago. They were phenomenal. I was not expecting them to be that awesome, but they were good, man.
That's awesome.
All right, favorite movie based around music, where it's comedy, autobiography, just something music related that's a movie that you really enjoy.
I do like the Rock of Ages musical
that
came out several years ago. Of course, I got a soft place in my heart for Julianne Hough. Listen in, Julianne. Mm. One day, me and you, babe. One day.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it just oozed 80s. I was like, this is everything that I like. Why can't we just have this time period be a constant thing?
It's coming back around. It feels like it's coming back around, man. Yeah.
As everything does.
Yeah. So what are some of your favorite things about Charleston?
Favorite things about Charleston.
Whether it's food, venue, beaches, just what are some of your things about this place that you love? Because, I mean, I love Charleston myself, but pretty biased.
Let's say this. In the grand scheme of cities our size, it's still slower paced. Now, granted, it's not as slow paced as a local like myself was growing up 20, 25 years ago. That I miss it like that. There's been a lot of transplants and everybody that moves here, and it's just crazy now. But I still love going to, where is it? Waterfront Park, where like the Pineapple Fountain is. I love to go out there. The beach is fun, although growing up here, I'm kind of over the beaches. I'm more of a mountain guy now.
Oh, sweet.
But yes, I definitely do love downtown Charleston is always fun. And then especially the historic plantations here. So yeah, I'm a huge
a lot of history down here.
So that's always fun. Love the history.
All right, how about some food, man? You have a favorite food spot, or do you prefer seafood, barbecue? What's your jam down here?
Shoot, I kind of eat a little bit of everything. Now, I wouldn't say it's Charleston themed or, you know, originality to Charleston, but it's hard, you know, I'll be super basic. It's hard for me to pass up like a good Japanese steakhouse. I mean, nothing like some steak and rice and white sauce, man.
Yes, sir, man. Yes, sir. Right on. I hear that. Okay, before we let you get out of here, man, let me get your top five influences on guitar or your top five guitarists. Sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different. Just the first five guys that are your guitar players that you love and idolize.
What if we did a little blend?
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, so I would think that the top three guitarists for me would be Paul Gilbert, Steve Vai, and George Lynch.
Nice.
I will say inspiration-wise of bands that really got me into playing are definitely going to be Def Leppard and Poison. Now, especially Def Leppard, that was the band that I was like, you guys are really awesome. I love how you write. I like how you sing. That band taught me how to sing because I was always trying to emulate them. And they taught me a lot about how to write a melodic song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always flashy shredding like the whole time. It's actually creating. Those are always going to be my top people.
Right on, dude. Right on. Great list. Great hang. Thank you so much for joining me, my friend. Wicked Love is going to be playing at the Tin Roof this coming Saturday, December 2nd. Make sure you guys get out there and get them. Sounds like 2024 is going to be a big year. You guys are part of those local bands that are just killing it. You guys are phenomenal. I love your band. And you, man, your guitar solo works awesome. We need more guitar solos in music, man. And I feel like you're bringing that back.
More guitar solos, man, for sure.
Cool, man. Well, thank you for hanging out with me, my friend. We'll see you around, buddy.
Sounds awesome, man. Signing off. We'll be right back.
Big shout out to Austin for joining me on the show today, man. Thank you so much for being on here. Again, like I said earlier, when I knew I was going to be talking about guitar players, Eddie Van Halen, Satriani, stuff like that, he was the first name that came to mind. And you saw by that song I just played, the dude has the chops. He is a great guitar player. I love watching him play live. Please support him. Please support his band, Wicked Love. They are awesome. Anytime they are not playing the same night I'm playing, I like to go out there and see them. They will be playing this weekend. They have a lot of things coming up, like you heard in that. So please support them, whether it's on Spotify, anywhere you get your music, throw Wicked Love in there and check them out, man. Speaking of Spotify, though, I want to take a moment right here in the show to say thank you to all the people that tune into this show, man. I got the Spotify Wrapped for the podcast this week, and it's cool, man. It's really, you know, it makes me feel grateful and thankful to everybody that tunes in. I see that we're in a bunch of countries. I see people are listening and tuning in. We have all kinds of people checking it out all the time. And I greatly, greatly appreciate every single one of you guys. So thank you again so much. And hey, man, spread the word. Keep sharing. Keep helping us grow. Come alive. Be in those comments. Tell me what you think about these bands I'm talking about. Tell me if you know a band I should be talking about or checking out, because that was the first goal of this show, was to discover new bands and talk about the bands I love. So thank you guys again so much. Be a friend, tell a friend, Thrill Me Podcast Network. Please like and subscribe. Metal Groove Podcast, please like and subscribe. Review at Rob Show, please like and subscribe. Rate, review all of our shows, man. Thank you guys so much. Thank you guys so much. And until next time, stay metal.